So we now conclude our morning, taking us through to chapter 55. Chapter 54, verse 1, which is quoted in Galatians chapter 4, verse 27, reads, "Sing, O barren one who did not bear, burst into song and shout, you who have not been in labour. For the children of the abandoned wife will outnumber the children of those living a married life, says Yahweh." Abandoned wife is Israel in exile. Your maker is your husband. Pretty daring image and very infrequent in the Old Testament. But it comes right into the New because John's Gospel begins at Cana, the marriage feast of Cana. The bridegroom and the bride, and the apocalypse is full of the, particularly at the end, the imagery of a wedding feast and God's love for his people likened to that of a bridegroom for a bride. So your maker is your husband. Yahweh of hosts is his name. The Holy One of Israel is your Redeemer. The God of the whole earth he is called. For Yahweh has called you back like a wife forsaken and grieved in spirit, like the wife of a man's youth when she is cast off, says your God. For a brief moment I abandoned you, but with great compassion I will gather you. In overflowing wrath for a moment I hid my face from you, but with everlasting love I will have compassion on you, says Yahweh, your Redeemer. I don't think that needs explanation. You can follow that. Continues, "This is like the days of Noah to me." So there, this is the time when all that mythical material from the first part of Genesis is also being evoked. So there's a lot of interplay between the different schools, I would imagine. In exile, I mean. "So this is like the days of Noah to me. Just as I swore that the waters of Noah would never again go over the earth, so I have sworn that I will not be angry with you and will not rebuke you. For the mountains may depart, the hills be removed, but my steadfast love shall not depart from you." You can see why the New Testament loved this, because he's getting so close to what Jesus will reveal at times in here. "My covenant of peace shall not be removed, says Yahweh, who has compassion on you." Verse 13, "All your children shall be taught by Yahweh." Quoted here by Jesus. "It is written in the prophets, they shall all be taught by God." That's it. That's the reference. "Everyone who's heard and learnt from the Father," says Jesus, "comes to me." Chapter 52, 55 verse 2. Got a few back the front, haven't I? 55 verse 1. Chapter 55 seems to have been created to provide a transition from the exilic writings of Isaiah 40 to 54 to the post-exilic writings of Isaiah 56 to 66, which we start next week. Next week, incidentally, we'll only do 56 and 57, just two chapters. Then we'll conclude the rest on our last day. So this chapter seems to link the exilic writings with the post-exilic writings. It stresses the importance of accepting the prophetic word, a word that we should expect to be beyond human comprehension. It's a lovely passage. However things might look, the promises conveyed through it will eventuate, say the editors later who put this in here. And here's the text. Chapter 55, "All of you there who are thirsty, come to the waters. You who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and at no cost." There's a few references there. Jesus here in chapter 7, "If you're thirsty, come to me." Revelation 21, in fact, quotes that, inviting people to the Christian community, to the assembly, to Mass, actually, which is like the community in all these seven cities of Asia. Each parish community there is a bridegroom coming down from heaven. That's how it is. Isaiah 55. Oh, I've got to go back, haven't I? Verses 2 to 5. Why do you spend your money on what is not food? This is an examination of conscience for all of us. Are we ready? It's a good question, isn't it? Why do you spend your money on what is not food? Why do you spend your earnings on what doesn't satisfy you? Listen carefully to me if you want to eat well. You'll be delighted with the richest fare. Incline your ear. Come to me. Listen so that you may live. I will make with you, and this is a very big statement, I will make with you an everlasting covenant, showing you the faithful love I showed David. They're faced with this enormous problem that God has promised to David, wouldn't he, that he'll be on the throne forever and his children, the dynasty will go on forever, etc., etc. Plenty of promises like that. These, reinterpreted in the light of new experience, and say, in fact, the promise made to David was made to us as a people, not to the king. So there may be no king, but the promise made is we all inherit this. We're all priest, prophet, king. We're all carrying on. So here we have a reimagining in the light of experience and a reinterpretation of an ancient promise seen now with more lucidity as being meant for the peoples. I will make with you an everlasting covenant showing you the faithful love I showed David. See, I'll make him a witness to the people, him, the nation, a prince who ruled over nations. See, you shall summon nations that you do not know, nations that do not know you shall come running to you because of Yahweh your God, the Holy One of Israel. He has glorified you, promising the nation their mission, which the Christian Jews saw as fulfilled in Christianity. And here's some texts here about being thirsty. You know them, John, Jesus, let anyone who's thirsty come to me. Book of Revelation, to the thirsty I'll give water as a gift from the spring of the water of life. Acts of the Apostles, I will give you the holy promises made to David. That's Paul preaching. So it's all going to be renewed then. And then other references to Isaiah there for you. Verse 6 to 9. It's an appeal now made to those who haven't welcomed God's word. Seek Yahweh. While these are beautiful endings now, I've only got a couple of pages to go. Seek Yahweh while he may be found. Call upon him while he's near. Let the wicked forsake their way and the unrighteous their thoughts. Let them return to Yahweh that he may have mercy on them. Return to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, says Yahweh. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. For as the rain and the snow come down from heaven and do not return there, till they have watered the earth, making it bring forth and sprout, giving seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goes out of my mouth. It shall not return to me empty, but it shall accomplish that which I purpose and succeed in the thing for which I sent it. And that concludes this whole... A glorious ending, isn't it? I mean, it's just quite stunningly marvellous. So the word that... when whatever God's... what the word that was spoken to you when you were conceived, promise of life that's eternal, that word will not go back to God empty. Now, we may reject it. We know hell's a dogma of our faith, the possibility that we're free and we can reject love. It's a possibility. It's unlikely any of us will do it. It's unlikely in the moment of death. Karl Rahner, I think I've said to you before, well, I think he's the greatest theologian I've ever read in here. He says, we have every right to hope that everyone will be saved. Because God is so beautiful that even the most stupid of us, in that moment of dying, will think, oh my God, you know. We have to come to terms with what we've done and whatever that purgatory means, and it means something, the suffering of admitting error and untruth and healing and all that, that timeless mystery. But God, at least we know, this is the good bit, that whatever we might do or not do, God's word spoken will not return empty to God. It shall accomplish that which I purpose. The word that God spoke to some of you on your marriage day. Not all marriages work, I know that, of course. Not all. My best friend left the priesthood 30 years ago, and he's a wonderful man still, obviously, and was a wonderful priest. So we're not kind of trying to tee things down for our purposes, but the promise made you in your marriage by God will be always there, and me to my priesthood, and you to your diaconate, and you to your whatever it is, your life. The promises that God makes to us, we... are bigger than the promise we make to God. Promise made you at your confirmation, the Eucharist, all of these words that God has spoken to us. It's really good to know, isn't it, that how fickle we might be, Paul says, how unfaithful we might be, God is always faithful. So we've got no problems there. So if we're in this room and it's all dark, well, it's going to be awfully possible that we mightn't lift the blind, because we might think it's bloody dark outside as well. There's no hope. And Jesus says to the woman caught in adultery and to the thief on the ground, everybody, lift the blind, because the sun is always shining. You can't stop God loving you, whatever you do. Can't do it. But some of us grew up, I think, with funny little ideas in our head that if you do that, God won't love you. I don't know, I don't think I was ever told that, but I bet it's around.
Huh? You make him sad.
Yeah, but that's it. So that God's love never stops. And hell is not God stopping loving me. It's me obstinately refusing to receive the love. That's what hell is. It doesn't affect God. It doesn't stop God, because God is love. Well, it's here. It's kind of starting here. It's not out of that text, but then we took Jesus to absolutely make it so convincingly right. And what did the majority of people do to Jesus? Crucify him? Got rid of him. So, I don't think I'm the only stupid person in the room. What I mean is, we are pretty strange.